Yeah, man, AP's got them at 5. Coaches poll's got the Dogs at 4. Texas, Ohio State, Oregon, Georgia. We were just having a conversation about is Oregon for real? You don't think so. You think Ohio State's got them. We'll talk to Connor about the Dogs first, and we'll get his take on that. Connor, I thought it was, you know, wasn't like the worst start, but it's still a little bit sluggish, but it's with the oldest rivalry in college football, for crying out loud. That matters.
Right. And you know, part of it is Auburn did a good job shortening up the game. Georgia only had 4 first-half possessions, and I think that sort of just naturally shrunk the game down. And so with 2 minutes left to go in the first half, Georgia's only got 7 points. It feels a little more of the same-ish from Georgia from what we saw, but they were able to turn things around in the second half and I think really take control of that game and put away an Auburn team that is just no longer in the same weight class as Georgia.
Connor, factoring in injuries, I know you can't help but prevent that. How would you grade the offensive line so far this season? To me personally, I've seen a little bit of up and down, but solid, but I don't know if it's been to the degree we may have thought to begin the year.
No, yeah, I would certainly agree with you there, Chris. It has been up and down week to week. I thought the Kentucky game was incredibly poor. I thought they've been a little bit better these last 2 weeks. And when you consider no Kate Ratledge for those last 2 games, Jared Wilson, their starting center, missed this past game for them. We've had to juggle some things around, but this is a group where we talked about in the offseason. We thought this could be one of the best position groups in the country, and it has just not been that this season. They have not played up to their standard. You still take them over most offensive lines in the country, but this is a group that is just for a variety of reasons has not played up to the level that we expected coming into the season.
What do you think of Drew Bobo's effort this week?
Yeah, I thought all things considered being thrown in like that, and obviously he had all week in practice to prepare and take reps like that, but a guy making his first start against Auburn in a situation like that, it's hard to ask for much more, especially at a center position where, you know, again, you're monitoring calls, communicating, you know, making sure that you get the snap right. He appeared to do all that. Again, wasn't the most dominant showing from this Georgia offensive line, but considering where he had to step in and what he had to do, I thought it was a solid first effort for Drew Bobo, the son of Georgia's offensive coordinator, Mike Bobo.
When it comes to Kirby's messaging, Connor, after the game where he, you know, appeared to call out the fan base in terms of their energy and their effort in providing a true home field advantage, do you feel like, as somebody who hears from the fan base all the time, that the fans have become a little bit jaded in terms of demanding not only winning, but winning with flair and winning with style?
I think this is all sort of molded into sort of a perfect stew that led to what happened on Saturday where, yeah, Georgia's coming off a loss. It's an Auburn team that, yes, it's a rival, and it was a big deal when I was in school, when I went there. Right. But part of that, you know, 2013, you had the prayer at Jordan here. That Auburn team went to the national championship game. I got one Auburn home game in my time at Sanford Stadium, and it was a huge deal. Georgia won 8 straight games against Auburn, and, you know, they've won 27 straight home games in a row. This is a team that when they show up in Sanford Stadium, they expect to win. And so I think that factored into, you know, this Auburn opponent is just no longer seen, at least by this current generation of Georgia fans, Georgia students, is seen as the same thorn in the side that it was for previous generations. And I think that's maybe where Kirby Smart is a little frustrated with what he saw on Saturday. But I remember looking up in the stands in the third quarter and just seeing swaths of empty seats in the 300 section when it's still, you know, a 21-10 game at that point. So I understand where Kirby comes from there. From a fan perspective, though, you know, it's a Georgia team. They keep finding ways to lose to Alabama. They beat everyone that they're supposed to. And so you can understand why this was just sort of seen as a ho-hum, you know, they kind of played like that on Saturday, effort from the Georgia fan base. And it's been led to a lot of really interesting discussions because I think for those that go to a lot of Georgia home games, they haven't exactly done, and I'm saying Georgia from like an operations side, done, I think, a lot to keep an engaged fan base, to make it a fan base that wants to stay there for all 4 quarters and be loud and be engaged in that sense. So it has led to, I think, a lot of difficult conversations, as we heard today from Kirby Smart.
I mean, it was hot as, you know, Hades, and a lot of guys are thinking about Bourbon Street or the Silver Dollar or whatever your bar is in Athens, wherever you want to go, right? And so the fans were not elite to what Kirby was looking for. And I get it. We've always felt, and this isn't a knock on, I don't want to get Dog fans mad at me, but there was times, and it kind of started with 93K Day and it ramped up, but it's never like ever been considered the most intimidating environment in all of SEC football.
No, this is a crowd that, you know, look, at times, I don't know if they've been able to beat the sort of wine and cheese crowd narrative that has sometimes been thrown out there about them. And I will say, too, you know, Kirby has been very complimentary of fans. He has given them credit for games that they have impacted in the past. You think of that, you know, 2022 Tennessee game, 2021 noon game against Arkansas. Obviously, night games, I think, are a special thing here at Georgia, but Georgia has just not been able to get those at home on a consistent basis, and part of that is because Georgia just has not had a great home schedule. And so I think some of this is opponent-driven, and Kirby views Auburn, I think, just differently than the rest of the fan base views Auburn again. And, you know, I do think that Kirby made these comments knowing that he's got another home game this week against Mississippi State where, you know, just looking at it on paper, there's not going to be a whole lot of juice, a whole lot of excitement for this game because Mississippi State is that bad. And they know that Georgia has Texas the week after that. And again, that is just going to naturally have, I think, a lot more excitement.
Do you feel like the wackiness and all the upsets from this weekend, Connor, allows for Georgia to lose to Texas and still be able to be in the finals?
I felt that Georgia did not have to win that Texas game prior to this weekend. I thought I've held the belief that if Georgia goes 10-2, you know, and let's say they lose, as you point out, Chris, to Alabama and to Texas, that because of what they have on the rest of their schedule, they've already got a win over Clemson. That win over Kentucky, I think, is going to continue to look better. You would theoretically have wins over Tennessee and Ole Miss. That strength of schedule is going to be strong enough, in my opinion, to get them to, say, a 10-2 where, you know, they're maybe hosting a first-round playoff game as a 7 or 8 seed, and then they're potentially playing a 1 or a 2 seed in the quarterfinals should they win that first home game. So in that sense, this Texas game is not a must-win, but they still have tough games on the schedule. Top 15 opponents in Tennessee and almost in addition to Texas. And I think you have to go 2-1 in those games to get home and get into the college football playoff. And I think as well that this game against Texas represents a major opportunity for Georgia to sort of show Texas, hey, like this is what it takes to be an SEC caliber program. Because Texas has been great so far to start this season, but their schedule has been incredibly weak. And with Michigan looking very suspect, I think it is maybe even weaker than perhaps it seems. So I think this Georgia-Texas game, when it does get played on October 19th, is going to be a game that Georgia is absolutely up for.
It's hard to see, you know, Oklahoma beat. I mean, again, but it's a rivalry game, and they do it, you know, at the state fair, and strange things have happened. But you're right, Texas does look like, for the most part, they will have the easier path. Connor, we said this earlier in the show, and I said it again. I don't want to sound like, you know, you're making excuses. It just, I didn't like Bobo's game plan against Alabama, and you see Alabama against Vanderbilt, and you feel, you know, if you don't get into a shooting match, if you play a controlled style, if you play the more run, you know, make ETN the focal point of it. Don't blitz as much. It just seems like, in hindsight, there's a lot of things that Georgia coaching staff would take back that they did in Tuscaloosa. You agree?
Yes and no. I don't have a problem with how Georgia came out aggressive throwing the ball to start that game, and because that's what worked really successfully for them in the later stages of the game. But obviously, I think from an offensive standpoint, you know, you want to start quicker there, and you understand that. But I think defensively, they learned their lesson in terms of being, as you point out, Mike, so aggressive with how they went after Milroe. Very, I think, reckless. And it was something we'd all talked about in the build-up to that game of, okay, how are you more aggressive with how you go after Jalen Milroe? Well, Georgia found a way to be too aggressive, and I think Milroe, to his credit, did a good job of burning him there. But to your larger point, I mean, you look at how Vanderbilt won that game, and you know, yes, it was 40-35, but Vanderbilt led wire to wire in that, and they were able to successfully run out the clock in the end. They weren't really sweating the end of that game. They have a ball for 42 minutes in that game, and so that's something where, especially after you see how Trevor Etienne, I think, played this last weekend, and when you're able to get Nate Frazier in the game and get him some reps and get this running game involved, I think that's where you see, okay, maybe time of possession. You know, that Alabama offense is still really, really good. But maybe the best way to limit them is to keep them on the opposing sideline and still be efficient and do what you do on the offensive side of the ball.
I think everybody has Ohio State, Oregon penciled. I think they did at the start of the season, Connor. Ohio State, a 3.5 favorite on the road. Who do you like in that one? I think Ohio State handles their business. What do you think?
I agree with you, Chris. I have not been very impressed with this Oregon team and what we have seen from them so far this season. And as for Ohio State, like, yeah, you could lump them in with Texas and say they haven't played anybody with a pulse. But I think this Ohio State team reminds me a little bit of this 2021 Georgia team where they've got a great defense. They know what they have to do. They've got two really good studs at running back that are going to be NFL type players. Obviously, Ohio State always has elite wide receiver talent. And you know, a Georgia team had Eddie Mitchell, George Pickens, Brock Bowers as a freshman there. There were some really talented receivers on that Georgia team as well. And so, you know, again, the quarterback is a big question mark there, but I think that this Ohio State team, is going to come out on Saturday and give a really controlled performance, knowing that this is probably, other than the Michigan game, for obvious, you know, off-field reasons and what that game means to Ryan Day, this is the biggest game of their season to this point, and they know they've got a chance to go out there and make a statement. And I think that they're going to go out there and do it, even though it should be a difficult environment in Eugene on Saturday night.
Connor Riley's with us, your guys, whipping around the college football world. Tennessee stumbles against Arkansas. They had a 14-3 lead. Hate to see a game end without the ball trying to be put in play as the clock ticked out. I don't know what's going on there, but does that obviously take some of the luster off? But do you feel that Tennessee, they it's just a tough road environment in Arkansas? Great win for Sam Pittman, or Tennessee will still be there when it matters late in the season?
Huge win for Sam Pittman, just in terms of job security, in terms of showing that, hey, like, you can keep this thing on the track and keep building, I think, to a respectable level. And that's maybe something that Arkansas has to reckon with, how they are viewed in the current day of college football. But with this Tennessee team, I'm really concerned about this offense, and they are having some very real growing pains with Nico Iamaliva. And, you know, you can write off the Oklahoma game, like, yeah, their defense was playing so well, and they sort of just downshifted because they didn't have to do a whole lot to win. They downshifted again in the second half of this game, and they just couldn't get the score they needed to win this game. And it's a credit to Arkansas for coming back and winning. But now, if you're Tennessee, you're getting the harder part of your schedule. And, you know, I talked earlier about how a 10-2 Georgia team possibly gets in. A 10-2 Tennessee team will get in as well, but they've got games against Alabama at home and at Georgia still on their schedule. And if you lose both of those, you're now looking at 9-3. And that becomes a very difficult, I think, argument to make in terms of getting into the college football playoff. And so if you're Tennessee, you can't be afforded to trick off games like they did against Arkansas, knowing what you still have on your schedule ahead of you. And they're going to play a Florida team that, look, I still don't think they're any good. I think by the end of the season, Billy Napier will no longer be the coach. But they've figured some things out since those early season stumbles. They got a nice win over UCF at home this past week, and that's a rivalry game. And there's going to be a lot of pressure on Tennessee, especially if that offense doesn't click and it is turning into a four-quarter game. I think that might actually help Florida a good bit, whereas it makes Tennessee more and more nervous the longer that turns into a game.
Great stuff, our man, Connor Riley. You can catch him in Dog Nation. There's also a great article talking about Bobo's son getting the start at center and everything else going down with the Dogs. You know, maybe we need to make a road trip. By the way, what is your bar in Athens, by the way, when you do have a chance to imbibe?
Ooh, my go-to in college was Magnolia's, yeah, which is right there on the corner. I just had a lot of great nights in that establishment.
Good answer. Good pull. Maybe we should take the clarion call from Kirby to heart and go out there and reestablish them home field advantage.
Let's do it.
It's a crap game, though. Dog on dog. All right, Connor, that's it, man. It's Dog Nation. Catch him every Monday right here on Duke's Bell. Thanks, brother.
Yep, thanks, guys.